Hey, what's up, guys? It's Kinda Neat, coming live from Cosmic Zoo Studios, the new, beautiful Atwater Village studio run by my homies, Daddy Kev and James No Can Do McCall. If you guys have been tuning in, you know that the last podcast was with Cadillac Ron. I'm not going to sit and bullshit too much. I just want to get right back into the conversation with him. So here is the enthralling part two of my conversation with Cadillac Ron. Thank you, guys. When I met you, it was like I had never heard of you, but at the same time, I was like, oh, this guy's like around the same age as me and he can rap and he's throwing shows and stuff. But it was weird because it was such like a tight-knit community at the time that it was all like word of mouth vouching. Like, I've never heard of Cadillac Ron. Like, who is this dude throwing these shows in Venice? And they're like, oh, he's a stand-up guy. Like, he handles his business good. And like, I'm like, all right, cool. And that was the thing, is like, yeah, all the people that you mentioned, Dumb, Syra, Rhetoric, James, Mike, like, we were on this little bubble of a scene doing shows at the Knitting Factory together or wherever, you know. And yeah, I remember you breaking in, and it's interesting to hear about all like the needing to be in jail, or like when you're in jail being like you're either a good guy or not good.
Right.
Because like, yeah, when you came into the scene, it was like you had a good reputation behind you already.
Right.
That was seemingly out of nowhere, and now I understand why.
Right. Well, it was like it's an interesting thing because, like, I think a lot of people would have been deterred from the scene because it was like, I mean, the message that I was getting, especially from like, you know, some of the like former members of the swim team and like these like assholes from Project Blood, like, and I love Project Blood and most of the people down there, but there were these people where it was like, bro, you're not one of us, bro. And it wasn't because I was white. You know, because at that point, you know, the Bloat had evolved. And like when I went to the Bloat in 97, like I couldn't rap, you know, like they wouldn't let me, you know, like I'd rap a few bars and someone would cut me off and be like, fuck you, white boy. Like, you know, and coming back like almost 10 years later,
it was very diverse.
It was like anybody could rap, you know, and like you. But the difference is back then they would still boo you if you were whack. You know, now it's like now saying you're from the Bloat to me is like, well, like whatever, you know, that's like you, anybody can say they're a Bloatian. It's like back in the day, it was like these kids, you know, like you'd be intimidated to get in a cypher out front, you know, because Pterodactyl's so drunk, like, and lurking around and like fucking otherwise. And like, you know, you're like, whoa, this is crazy. Like a lot of them, like I got this vibe, like they didn't want to let me into their community. And I was so like, I just wanted to rap. Like, I was like, yo, like, I want to just make music and shit. And I knew I was dope. And I was doing shows, like, pay-to-play shit with Sean Healy or fucking, you know, like, I was trying to just get in anywhere. And it was people like Open Mic, you know, that fucking were like, yeah, I'll do a song with you. You know, and, like, actually, when nobody would fucking talk to me, and, like, Open Mic lets me come to his house and do a track, you know. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, there is some sense of community and, like, you know, it was around that time that that I met, like, Exist, you know. And I had actually approached him, and I was, like, sending him a message on MySpace, like, hey, will you do a feature on my record? Like, you know, because I grew up, like, listening to, like, Shapeshifters.
And he's talking about Existerio for the you guys that want to search that out.
Yeah, Existerio. And, you know, I was like, I'll give you $100, like, to do a verse on my album or whatever. And then when we actually link up and meet, and he's like, damn, like, you rap dope. He's like, you don't need to give me any money, bro. Like, I, like, want to be, like, on your shit, you know? Like, and then he listens to, like, a little bit about my life. And then he's like, yo, man, don't even trip. Like, fucking anything I can do to help you out, like, let me know. You know, at the time, like, my life stayed real, even, like...
Were you cleaned up at this point?
I was cleaned up, but, like, shit was still always, like...
Had your parents taken you back in? Like, they were cool with you again? Or
yeah, I mean, it took a while, but, like, my first baby's mom was, like, locked up, pregnant, and, like, so I was expecting a kid. You know, my life was pretty dysfunctional still. So I had this, like, pregnant baby's mom in jail. You know, like, I didn't know fucking... You know, it was still like, I still, but it was all like adding to like my rap life persona where I was like, this is how, like, I worked so hard to work backwards down the socioeconomic ladder where now I'm this fucking lost rapper in LA trying to make it with the fucking, like, you know, the whole 8 Mile complex where I'm like baby mom fucking in jail, kid on the way, like, and it put this extra fire under me.
What was she in jail for?
She's an idiot. Like, I don't like to mention her because she's a retarded. But, like, she just was a fuck up, you know? Like, she just couldn't get her shit together. Yeah, yeah. If my son ever listens to this, like, I'm sorry that I said that about your mom. But, like, you know, my new girlfriend is, like, and my new baby's mom is, like, so much cooler and tighter than that bitch.
Do you have full custody of your son?
Yeah.
And so that she's out of the picture?
Yeah, she's gone. She got deported. And the only reason I stayed with her was because she was pregnant, you know? Because I was like, I would have left that bitch fucking a long time ago. But, you know, she like did a fucking shady bitch move. Yeah. And as soon as she went to jail, she knew she was pregnant. And she's like, I'm going to keep the baby because she was like, she knew I'm a good dude. She knew I would stick around. And like, that shit worked for her because, you know, she manipulated me into fucking coming to visit her and fucking, you know, and I just did that shit for my kid, you know, because like I loved my son. And then when he was born, you know, I got him right away because she was locked up. So in the midst of all this, I'm out in the streets trying to fucking make a name for myself. And it was a very, like, it was a hard couple years because, like, I was like, I know I'm a good person. I know I'm a real dude at this point. Like, I've been tested, like, all over the world and, you know, on every level of survival. And, but I'm not getting anything out of, like, nobody's, like, there's no reciprocity in the scene. It was, like, very closed, man. And that's why, like, people that are trying to make it in L.A. in music, it's fucking tough. Because there's so much talent. It's like, and there's a lot of mediocrity, but it's like you have to have something unique about yourself because you can't just be like, today it's a little different, as you know. Like, you could just be this YouTube anomaly.
It is different than it was before YouTube broke, absolutely.
Right.
But I remember at the time, like the time that you're talking about trying to break into the quote-unquote scene, and let's be honest, like, our fucking scene never really went anywhere. Like, no one that was directly involved in our scene really ever took off fully. Well, Jonathan Dumbfounded is like, he's doing it. He's doing the damn thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? But like, I don't think anybody that we like really in that scene ever got signed or like really fucking had a hit. You know,
Syrah
what I mean?
Now.
Well, yeah, Syrah. Yeah, definitely. She's on her way up. Yeah. Absolutely working with Skrillex and everything. But yeah, so this scene was so like, we were so self-involved. But yeah, people would always ask like, hey man, how can I get involved in the LA scene? And I'd be like, you know, you just have to be a fucking cool person that people want to be around. And
right.
That's all it was, because none of us were like doing anything like other than just we got along with each other or we didn't.
You just had to be there all the time.
You had to be around all the time. You had to be a familiar face and you had to like not be thirsty, basically. Like,
yeah.
You couldn't be the fucking kid going, oh, hey man, will you listen to my tape? It's like,
right.
You just had to be a fucking normal person.
That was basically what paid off, I think, was just like my stick-to-itiveness and like, yeah. You know, my willingness to play Urban Underground every Friday for a year,
yeah.
You know, and like, I wouldn't recommend that to anyone, but that's what I, you know, I was like, all right, I got to do something, man. Like, I need to play. That's the only thing that's keeping me sane. And like, I was working on enough projects in the studio at that point that I was like, I just want to play live shows. That's what I like. That's always been my favorite thing. And like, I think for like, there was 2 years where I was playing at least like 4 times a month in LA. And that was like, that's what became where people started like, oh yeah, I heard of that dude.
Yeah. At the time before like this new wave of the internet shit started cracking, it was like, if you weren't playing shows, you weren't doing shit.
Right.
Playing shows was like, man, your shit was cracking.
You had to get out.
If there was promoters that wanted to put you on a flyer every weekend, then you were doing it.
And that was like the thing. It was, yeah, how many flyers are you on this month? And who are you on the flyers with?
And I almost feel it's the opposite nowadays.
Yeah, now it's like, don't play shows.
Yeah, it's like, only play shows if you know people are going to show up and shit.
Yeah, and it's going to be cracking as fuck. But, you know, it was that, but that attitude and that, I think that willingness of artists to like, that those are the people that are still around.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's cool now because, like, we were talking – me and Serp were talking about this the other night. And I was saying – we were talking about the swim team specifically. And I was saying a lot of those dudes were successful. And he was saying, you know, well, no, if we're talking about, like, financial success. And I said, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about they're still relevant in the scene, like Open Mic, Eagle, Satire. Granted, Dumbfounded's probably had the most, like, commercial success or, you know, like
– financial
success – But the people that are still respected and still pushing the envelope as far as their craft is concerned,
they always stuck with it.
Yeah, and I'm like, that for me, that's what I wanted. So I was basically telling him, I said, I believe that I'm a success. And because when I was fucking in 2001, you know, opening for fucking the Living Legends, like, I wouldn't have really thought, like, I would be collaborating with any of them on, like, a peer-to-peer level, you know? And, like, fast forward 10 years later.
You're in the same crew with Lucky.
Yeah, I'm in the crew with Lucky. I rapped on some of Eli's beats, you know? And it's like, that having those experiences for me was, like, I've toured the country, like, a few times over. You know, I've had fans come to me in different states and be like, you know, I've had those experiences where I'm like, as an artist, like, that was all I wanted. Like, AC Alone disrespected me at the Whiskey A Go Go in 1997, you know, and was like, get the fuck out of here, kid. Like, you're whack. And I was like, damn, dude. Like, I fucking loved you, bro. Like,
I have like, very similar experiences. You
know, like, I was like, fuck, man. Like, you know, Book of Human Language, man. Fucking All Balls, No Bounce, bro. Like, you know, oh, Inner City Griots. Like,
Sunspot Jones did the same fucking thing to me in like 2000.
Dude, Idea fucking dissed me the hardest than anybody ever dissed me. And that's where you're learning how to be like respectful and not thirsty, like you were talking about. Like, because I'm giving Idea my CD at a show. He's playing with Atmosphere on the God Loves Ugly tour. And it's like, you have to be respectful. Like, that's his moment. Idea and Abilities are killing it. Like, they want to shine in their show. They don't want to be getting CDs from you.
I think one of the things, and I know that you'll agree with me on this, one of the biggest mistakes that every single young artist makes, because I did it, you did it, everyone does it, is like trying to get your music to your favorite artists, because your favorite artist is still trying to fucking make it as well. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, they can't help you yet. I wish I could help everybody that fucking gave me a CD or sent me an MP3, but like, you just can't, because I'm still trying to get myself on.
Right, you know? Exactly. And I think allowing people to have their time, like, it's like, I didn't understand that. Like, absolutely. I'm like, I just handed Idea my CD. How come he's using it as a drink coaster?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's like, bro, he's signing posters. He's blowing up right now, like, you know? And, you know, allow these people to have their moment. It's like, because if everybody's coming at you like, what can you do for me? And that's a big thing with battling today, is like, I can't go anywhere in the battling community without kids that want to talk to me about their battling career. And it's like, I'm not really interested in you, you know, like, no disrespect, but like, I only watch my battles, bro.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm so self-obsessed, like, you know, like,
yeah.
I'm not going to watch yours. Like, if you send me the link on Facebook, like, 9 out of 10 times, I'm not even going to watch it. You know, the only thing I still do is, like, I listen to CDs that people hand me, and that's usually just to see how whack they are, and then, like, you know, discard them.
The freeway test?
Yeah. And it's like, and then a few times, like, fucking, I get one, and I'm like, damn, this fool was rapping his ass off. Like, me and Serp were listening to this kid, Quasar, from Rhyme Fighters, and, it's a dude I've seen around for years, you know, but I never really, like, listened to his CD. And then I got it in Santa Barbara at some show, and that shit's tight, you know? It's like, nice. It's like, it's just an example of, like, that one time you listen to a CD and you're like, damn, I should have listened to this fool the first time he handed me his CD, you know? But it's a crazy scene, man.
I hadn't seen you in, like, a while. I hadn't seen you in, like, a year or something, maybe. And then I got a text message from a number I didn't recognize, like, hey, what's up, man? And I'm like, who is this? And you said, hey, it's Caddy Ron. You know, I'm back, and I'm here, and I'm doing right. And I'm just, like, contacting everyone that I haven't talked to in a while.
Right.
What was the route to where you're at right now?
Right about, like, 2011. This is, like, where I wish the Battle Rap podcast had taken the direction, because, like, my role in the destruction of, like, Grind Time and, like, the, you know, like, that to me was, like, so epic.
So hold on. The other podcast he's talking about is James No Can Do and Jeff Weiss have a podcast on Earwolf called Shots Fired. And actually, I listened to that one with Avocado on the way back from my last video shoot.
Uh-huh.
And that inspired me to invite you to do my podcast, because I was like, man, I feel like they didn't let Caddy talk enough, and that motherfucker's interesting as shit. And so that's why I invited him on.
Yeah, so, like, because, like, that's something, like, I think people, like, they don't like to, like, they don't want to, like, stir up things with me or have a conversation I'm not going to like or something. And, you know, but it's, like, there was a lot of weird politics involved, but basically, like, I became the manager of Grindtime West Coast, and this was like 2011 after Lush stepped down. And he basically was like, I was throwing from gaining respect in the scene and getting involved in battling, and then ultimately having the shows in Santa Monica.
You were helping a lot behind the scenes already, anyways, right. Booking venues and stuff.
Sure. Right? Yeah. And then I started throwing my own battle events, kind of taking the place of Bar Exam, where there was that void left when Satire mm-hmm. was running Bar Exam. And like, I was basically doing these tryout battles, and then Lush was like, yo, you know, why don't you become the manager of the West Coast? And, like, you know, you can, like, revive the West Coast. And I was like, it would have been a perfect, great idea, you know, but, like, I had just relapsed on heroin. And I vaguely sensed that this wasn't, like, the brightest idea in the world. But like, having been battling for 2 years and, like, you know, that was, like, a huge – to be asked to run the West, that was, like, the West was the best division. So yeah. How are you going to say, like, no, like, I'm not in a position to do
what
that?
What made you relapse?
I don't, man, you know, I relapsed at the Gooch video shoot. And I don't know if you've seen the video, yeah. But it's, like, me and my girlfriend and, like, you know, shouts out to Jill. I love her. And, you know.
What's up, Jill?
Hey, Jill. What's up, girl? I'm going to take you to the fair, girl. we're going to the carnival this weekend, girl. But, like, it was just like this whole, we were fucking with Ever Ready Records and like, which is, that was a whole, I don't know.
That's a whole other story.
Yeah, that's just so weird.
Yeah, yeah.
But all of a sudden there was like these kids and they're like, we're going to pay for your video.
They had some money.
And, you know, hey, come to the Roosevelt Hotel and, you know, you're signed to Ever Ready now. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I never signed anything, right. But all right. Like, and you know, my girlfriend and me and like my new girlfriend and like, you know, my whole life, everything was going great. And it's like, we're at this video shoot. There's girls kissing girls and like Ted Nugent's daughter and like, you know, free alcohol. And like, we're in the David Bowie room and like something about like everything just like going so well where I was kind of like, damn, this was more than I ever had hoped for as an artist, like to be having other people produce my videos and shit. So, yeah. You know, I took a pill. You know, I took a little piece of a Suboxone or, you know, it's buprenorphine. It's like a pretty powerful opioid. And I got super faded. And then the next time I had a battle, my nerves were kind of going a little. So I popped a little piece of a pill and fucking just chilled. And, you know, ultimately, I think I spent my 30th birthday, like, shooting heroin in New York City.
Wow.
And, you know, just locked in the Holiday Inn in the Financial District, fuck it. And I went there to do a battle, but, and that was, like, when people were like, oh, like, what happened to Ron in that battle? It was, like, kind of weird, like.
So you still showed up?
Yeah, I showed up, but I couldn't remember my shit. I wasn't really all there.
Yeah.
You know, I spent most of, like, 4 days in a hotel room shooting heroin in New York City. Then right after that, Lush is like, hey, you should run the West Coast Grind Time. And I was like, oh, all right. And, you know, I couldn't pull it off. Basically, the short version is, like, I fucked off some sponsorship opportunities from people, like, giving me money. And, you know, and none of this was, like, malicious or intentional. It was just, like, I got a serious drug problem. And people are handing me, you know, thousands of dollars in cash. I was booking tours still. Like, I was riding on the fact that my name was solid and good and I was able to get advances for a tour I was putting together. And, you know, when you're getting a $1,500 guarantee with a $750 advance, you know, I would just spend the advances before I even went on tour. And then I didn't even go on tour. So then people are like, really quickly, you know, then I fucked up a whole big event up north at Oakland. And, you know, basically it was like, that was like, and now I joke about it. I'm like, you know, that's how important I am that, like, when I fucked up, I, like, ruined, like, other people's lives. But it's yeah. It's not really funny, but...
What was the moment where it was like, I got to clean my shit up again?
I tried to go back to treatment. Like, last year, my second son was born in October. And I wasn't doing well at all, you know, and I had to, like...
You got real skinny again, didn't you?
Yeah.
How thin were you? What did you get down to?
I think I get down to, like, 140. Yeah. And, like, I can lose weight like nothing, you know. On drugs, it's like... I think I could drop like 30 pounds in like.
But I mean, your normal walk around weight has got to be at least 175.
170, yeah.
That's a lot of weight to lose.
Oh, I lose it so fast. Like, you know, it's just like ridiculous. And, you know, my girl, bless her heart, you know, like she was doing good and she was like fucking, you know, she had the baby and I had to go back to the rehab and just like, fuck, you know, try and get myself cleaned up again.
That's good. At least there was no jail stint or anything that caused that. It was just your own choice.
And that's miraculous, man. Cause like in the process, like the thing is like people, and I'm going to say this probably just once, you know, but like, the thing is how people joke about me being a drug addict and like how that's how they attack me in the battles. And there's all this like, and I play it up, you know, like
yeah, rap the character, star,
the Methadone Don. But like, the fact is that like this is like the only time I'll be serious about drug addiction, but like chemical dependency is like really fucked up. And like, I've died like numerous times. I've seen like really close friends of mine die. You know, I've been involved in like fatal car crashes. I've seen this shit destroy my family, you know, like I've seen it destroy me like numerous times. And like I think the only way that I've survived is through maintaining like this levity about it, and being, once I get cleaned up, then I laugh about everything and put it out there, and I'm like, I'm not ashamed of it, you know. But for anybody that thinks that I don't take this shit really seriously is like tripping, because
it's like you have to laugh about it not to let it fucking destroy you.
Yeah, I mean, I spent so many fucking days like in these institutions, like fucking or rehabs or hospitals, or like faced with like, you know, potentially like life threatening things happening to me. And it's like waking up from overdoses with catheters in your dick and fucking not knowing how you got there, and having the police looking for you for like shit that you don't even remember doing. And, you know, it's like, you know, like I, you know, not being able to be at the birth of your first child or your second child, you know, because you're strung out, is like, this is all shit that like will never go away from you, you know, and the pain that like remains is very true. And I think the only way that I can process it, like I wasn't present at the birth of my second child, and, because I was on drugs. And like I never even like dealt with that. I never sat down and thought about it, or like, you know, I never like apologized to my kid's mother and said like, you know, I'm sorry I wasn't there, you know. And like the other night, Serp and I are writing for this project, and like all of a sudden that's the verse that I write. And it's like fucking, that's like full circle life issue reality music. It's like, and the next day I was able to, because of art, basically, like, and walking through that emotion, and then I seen my girlfriend the next day, who's my kid's mom, and sat down with her at a table and said, I wrote a verse last night about our son or whatever. And then explaining to her the verse in a way for me was like being able to tell her, like, I was sorry, you know? And, that's just how this shit works, man. It's like fucking, so it is like the darkness that surrounds the art is like all encompassing and always there. But, you know, ultimately what happened was like, I got out of treatment last year, and, you know, I ended up relapsing again after a short period of time. And like, it was extremely like serious relapse. That's like, I didn't show up for Vendetta, which was this huge event that they had booked me for. And it wasn't like, I don't want to show up. It wasn't like, you know, it was at that point, it was like, dude, like it's been both ways. Now people have seen Cadillac like do good, and people have also seen me like fall. And to fall any further was just too much of like, I just was like, I'm not coming, you know, like I don't, like it would be worse for me to show up like this than to just not show up, you know, because I don't want to add any fuel to the fire.
I think people do care about you in that scene, and it probably would have been fucking painful to see you that way, to like really be, people wouldn't have felt good seeing you that way.
And that's, it's funny you say that, because like there was a post on Rap Music and it was like, does Cadillac Ron need an intervention? Yeah. And like it was actually a fan who was like, hey guys, like I know we joke a lot about Caddy, but like the last few battles he really hasn't looked good. Mm-hmm. And something's like obviously going on, like, what should we do? Yeah. Like, and then a lot of the fans were like, oh, fuck Caddy. Like, I hope his children
right,
die.
Right, that boards a lot of trolls.
Yeah, man. But, yeah. Like, there was a few people like, yeah, I've been worried about him. Like, he's not looking good. And I think a lot of my friends had no experiences with me, like, when I was using, you know, because I was clean for a number of years. And it was like, you know, it was, again, it's like you don't want to have to tell someone, like, you know, what to do. But I think, and then, you know, last summer basically was like fucking, I ended up in the hospital, like, with some very serious problems. And it was just faced with the, like, I mean, I just couldn't stop, man. That was like, and that was like the hardest thing was like, and I think people don't understand that about, like, drug addiction is like, the worst place, like, an addict can be is, like, when you really want to stop. And, like, you're not enjoying it. Like, it's not fun. Like, you're in the fucking hospital. You know, your girlfriend just left you. Like, you know, your kids aren't in your life. Like, nobody's coming to visit. And you just can't stop getting high. And at that point, you're like, you know, that's where I was, like, sitting in a hospital room in some medical center in fucking the Valley, not even knowing how I got there. Having the doctor tell me I have some, like, crazy blood infection from something. I got IVs all over and fucking, you know, I'm still, like, the last person I know. I'm still, like, trying to have them bring me drugs to the hospital. Wow. And then, you know, like, fucking, you know, and that's when I was like, dude, I really can't stop. Like, this was, like, and it was just, like, torture because I had been sober for years. So it was, like, you know, it was, like, it was like dangling the carrot. It was like, yo, like, haha, like, remember when your life was good? And, like, you know, it's like all of a sudden everything was just fucking. And then, you know, I ended up, like, luckily my family, like, fucking came through for me. And that was a hard thing for them to do because they had basically written me off as far as, like, my life had gotten back together. But as far as, like, you know, enabling or helping or whatever you call it, like, they were pretty hard-lined, like, tough love, like...
As soon as you start again, you're out of our family again.
Yeah, like, you're using, you figure it out, you know, and, like, you know, I will plug this program called Music Cares. It's the Musician's Assistance Program. It's actually run by the Recording Academy through the Grammys.
Yeah.
And, like, if you're, like, an impaired musician or an artist, like, specifically working in the music field, sound engineering, whatever... And you need help, like, they actually will, like, pay for you to go to treatment.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, and it's like they'll pay for you to go to sober living. Like, they'll fucking help you, dude. And so, like, if anybody was listening that was dealing with any issues, like, with chemical dependency, fucking the Music Cares program through the Recording Academy, like, is they, like, saved my life, basically. Like, they gave me, like, $11,000 and put me in a detox and fucking... Wow. Got me squared away.
How did you find out about the Music Cares program?
We were doing, like, the Grind Time shit on Warped Tour, like, a couple years ago, and they had a booth, and like a friend of mine was working at the booth, who was a musician that I respect, and they kind of were, like, talking about it, and I was like, I had known that they were clean, and so when shit was getting, like, real hectic, you know, basically I reached out to them and they put me in touch with the woman named Shireen who directs the program. And they just were like, you know, like the same day I called, they were like, yeah, we can help you out. And this was crazy fucking. I was, like, literally, like, at death's door, like, and I had, like, I was, like, leaving this hotel on, like, Venice and La Brea, and I was walking up the street, and I just, like, robbed a house the night before, and I had, like, this bag, this, like, Louis Vuitton, like, luggage, like, full of, like, all this stolen shit, and I had a pistol in my waistband, and I had, like, my pockets full of, like, drugs, and I'm walking up the street, and like, I'm the only dude I know that gets pulled over, like, on foot, you know, so, like, the police are driving by me, and they just fucking, it's like 11 a.m. They flip a U-ey and fucking come back, and they told me to sit down on the bus stop, and I was like, fuck, you know, like, I'm a fucking felon, and I'm, like, in, like, all kinds of violation, and I'm sitting on this fucking bus stop, and I knew that I was going to prison for, like, ever. And, like, I was just like, fuck, man. And this is like I'm like I do have faith in some sort of like higher power, and for whatever reason, like the cops didn't search me. Wow. And I was sitting there like, and I had already like resigned myself to the fact that I was busted, like at least 5 years, and they let me go without even searching me. And so right after that, Music Karis called me.
Were you high?
Oh, I was fucked up. Yeah. And but like for some reason when I'm high, like I talk to the cops like so well that like, you know, like I always like just fucking manage to like get out of it somehow. Yeah, like I just talk to them really well and respectful, and they're like, you know, I've had a lot of instances with police where they were like, just let me walk away. And like I thought like for sure I was fucked. And right after that, I mean, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe that I just got away. And Music Karis calls me and they're like, yo, we have a bed for you in a detox. Like, you have to get there today. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. I was like, I'll be there, you know, because yeah. I was like, this is like God working in my life. And yeah, I mean, they paid for everything, you know, detox, fucking 30 days in rehab, fucking, you know, and that's like, that's definitely what it took for me to, like, you know, get back to having a desire to want to, like, live again.
Tell the people what you're doing right now, because I think it's very noble.
I'm working right now for a nonprofit agency in Culver City. And they basically, like, all we do is refer people to self-help programs. And so people call in all day and, like, have various life issues. And we get them, like, connected to referrals for self-help. The big thing that we do is, like, they operate a collaborative housing program, and it's basically dealing with people that, like, haven't had been able to live in any other type of environment and putting them in touch with homeowners that are in line with our, like, principles, and, like, allowing them to live in, like, a family environment where they feel supported and feel like, you know, attending some sort of self-help group, whether it's, like, a dual diagnosis like mental health group or Alcoholics Anonymous or some other 12-step program. And the idea is that people that have issues that get involved in self-help, like, are less likely to go back to the hospital. They're more likely to be med compliant. Like we were talking about earlier, this idea that they're helping themselves. That's why it's self-help, you know?
Because when you are suffering from like schizophrenia, bipolar, and you're self-medicating with heroin or whatever, it's like, if a doctor tells you take these meds, you don't trust the doctor.
Right. And it's like typically like the humans just don't respond to authority, and they don't respond to like being told what to do. And so when you allow somebody to feel like it's self-generated, like they're helping themselves because they want to get help, or they see other people around them that have overcome similar issues, you know, that's like the main – they build a trust. And generally, like somebody that has had like a similar experience to an individual like that can win their trust when like a social worker won't be able to do that.
So when a guy like you is in the office that's in, you know, that's tattoos on the hands, that knows what's up, it says like, hey man, this will work for you. It's a lot better than somebody in a suit and tie.
Right. Cause I'm not saying this will work for you cause I read that it'll work for you. I'm saying this will work for you cause it worked for me. And like, I'm saying I benefited, like my life changed as a result of my involvement in like 12-step programs, right? The only reason I'm alive today basically is because there's a community of people that have dealt with issues like myself and they helped me out, you know, and that's why, that's what we do. And like, that's why like a big part of the job is like within the first few minutes of talking to someone, you have to disclose to them your personal information, not detailed, but generally you have to let them know, I understand. And like, I've been there, like, you know, and if you want to get specific, you know, you could say, yeah, I've dealt with that. You know, I know what that's like. I know what it's like to have a family member that's strung out, or I know what it's like to be strung out, or I know what it's like to be locked in a psych ward, or like, I know what it's like to not get jobs because you're a felon, you know, and then you build this rapport with somebody. And that's how you develop trust with an individual, because they're like, okay, you're not coming at me like the judge or the PO. You're coming at me like just as a peer, and it's all peer to peer. And that leaves room for somebody to feel like they're helping themselves, because it's like, all right, if they can do it, I can do it, and what do I have to lose? I'll try this out and see what happens.
Going way back to earlier, you mentioned the first time that you were involved in the court system when the girl got her jaw broke, that you just didn't feel anything about it. Now that you're clean, sober, living life again, it seems like your life is in a positive place right now. You've got your family around you. You know, you got a good lady, your kids. Do you feel? Are you feeling right now?
Yeah. And that's something like that. Again, it took like a long time. It definitely allows you to operate in like this kind of like numbness, you know, where you just kind of are disassociated. And if you've dealt with issues your whole life, like, I never really felt like a part of or accepted, or like my self-esteem was always kind of low. And it's like, you know, then you end up seeking lower companions and seeking like a life that, you know, not living up to your potential and just kind of under-earning. And ultimately, like, I recreated myself as somebody that like I wasn't intended to be, you know, like I was probably on this trajectory for, you know, being like a real estate agent or like a businessman. You know, and it's like I worked hard at like breaking myself down to being like this like fucking criminal felon who like has a totally twisted outlook on life, who has seen like horrible things happen to people. And that's another thing too, like, I mean, I think like personally, like I deal with like some elements of like PTSD, because like I think if you lived in like the downtown LA area and you've been on the streets, like it's like war. It's like going to battle, you know, and like you can't talk about the shit to normal people without kind of joking about it, because nobody really understands what that's like. Like, I can't sit at dinner. My parents don't want to hear about it because it's terrifying. You know, like I can't talk about like seeing people die or seeing someone get shot or like watching someone get beaten to death, you know, or me getting beaten to like within an inch of my life in an alley behind $5 of dope. You know, and like when you talk about things like that, people are turned off or afraid of you. And, you know, kind of getting to a point where you like find the people that you can kind of relate to on that. And like that's why it all comes back to art for me, because that's been the only place that I could really tell the truth, you know. Mm-hmm. And like I don't write anything that isn't true. You know, like I moved from like writing about other people's lives to like writing about my own, and that's like where I'm at with everything now. And I think the feelings have come back to the point where it's like mainly like I appreciate being alive, and you know, like I actually enjoy, like yesterday I just had this moment where I'm sitting with my girlfriend and our my two sons and a few dogs, like watching TV. And like that's something like I never thought that I would be able to experience, you know, like I never thought that I would be like happy or be able to like just enjoy being with people. And like, you know, just taking my kids to the park, you know, like that's like such a small triviality that people would take for granted. But it's like, for me, that's a huge deal. It's like, you know, A, like being trusted to like take care of your children, you know, or like having people respect you enough where they like think you're a good person again, but also just to appreciate like life. And like, you know, you're talking about appreciating the beauty of life through LSD. Like today, like I can just look at everything and be like, you know, I think everything is awesome, you know. And especially if you've made it out of the darkness, to get back to like a place where you can appreciate the light, you know, and then seeing others like glad that you're back, you know, like that's been, and that's like, I give a big kudos to like the artistic community in LA, because the general sentiment of people that I had interacted with for years when I'm doing well is like, we're really glad that you're doing well because we know you're a good person and like, you know, we're happy to see you not dead. And, you know, I think just like a couple weeks ago, I saw Lush at some event, and he had eaten like a lot of Molly, and I'm not, I mean, if Lush, yeah. Listen, I don't care. Yeah. Lush eats Molly, yeah. You know? And, he was like, you know, almost in tears, like, you know, off the Molly obviously, but like, he was like, bro, like I basically had like written you off. just expected you to die. And I had to prepare myself emotionally for like the fact that you were going to like be gone. And like, you know, and hearing people say that shit to you, and like, especially your parents or your brothers, or, you know, I have children, and like, you know, being back in their lives and like being a dad, like that's like the most important thing I can do.
And I would say, like, going back to earlier, that definitely makes you a success as well.
Absolutely. And like, I think also like my definition of success has like changed and evolved so much, where it's like today being successful means being accountable, showing up for your kids, being responsible, having a job. You know, if music isn't providing all the money that I need, then I need to be working full time. And that's something like that I, you know, like I don't go and do a show out of state unless it's going to make more money than I would have made staying at home working. You know what I mean? And like that's where I'm at. And that doesn't mean I'm any less of a musician because I'm not, you know, fully self-supporting from music. Music has been a great supplemental income. And, you know, there's those times where you do a show and make a lot of money and you're like, fuck, like. But, you know, like I think, and I talked about this, anybody who says they're succeeding financially through music, like the first question I want to ask them is like, do you have health insurance? And if you're like, yeah, you know, then I'm like, that's awesome. You know, like, yeah, you're succeeding. You're like, if you just pay the rent and like, that's it. Like a lot of us do have children and families and fucking real life shit going on. And, taking responsibility for that today is like my main priority, you know. And I could honestly, like, I could walk away from the scene, you know, like I'll never walk away from music and I'll never fucking stop being an artist. And like I basically turned my life into art, you know. And like my conception of what art is that it's everything, you know. I'm not here to debate fucking anything about art. Like I consider myself like a living work of art. And as cliche as that sounds or weird, it's like all the shit that I've done to like, you know, through tattooing or the way I dress or who I've become is like, you know, that's just this ongoing evolving art piece, you know. And then a big thing that I've had to deal with is like learning when that stops and when the real life starts, and like having this other persona of Cadillac Ron, the rapper, and Robert Paulson, the father and the employee, you know, the duality's been confusing at times because it's like, it's hard for me not to want to tell everyone in the workplace, like, hey, like I have these videos on YouTube that like, I have fans, like I, you know, I've done this. I came in second place in this Red Bull battle. Like, you know, people know who I am in some small circles of the world. Like, but it's like, that's not my job, you know, like, and, you know, there's times too where I'm like, fuck, I hope my kids never like go watch my fucking battles on YouTube or like, you know, right. But that's also the legacy that I leave as an artist. And it's like, I'm not ashamed of that. And, I think, but you know, being myself, the man first is like today is much more important than the artist because the artist has a tendency to like kill me. And like my dad's even said to me like, yo, Cadillac Ron is going to kill you, you know, and like being able to understand that like, when I go home, I'm Robert Paulson, you know. When I'm in the streets, I'm Cadillac Ron, you know. When I'm doing shows or networking or whatever. But it's like people respect me. They don't, you know. And the shit, the reason my name is still Thorough is because of who I am, you know.
Well, hey, man. Thank you for coming in.
All day, bro.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Tell the people real quick where to find you on Twitter.
At Cadillac Ron, CadillacRon. My Bandcamp is caddyron.com, caddyron.com. And the crew website is maquinamuerte.com. You know, and all of our shit's up there, so.
I really appreciate the conversation, man. Thank you so much.
All day, brother. Thank you.
Okay, thank you guys for tuning in. Don't forget to hit us up. Follow us on at That's Kinda Neat, THATSKINDANEAT. That's our new Twitter for the podcast. Hit us up on Twitter, too. At It's Intuition, ITSINTUITION. Go look at my YouTube channel. Got some videos up. YouTube.com/It's Intuition. Follow my man behind the scenes on the boards, the man who makes this thing run and operate, Ben Shim. The engineer extraordinaire on Twitter at IAmDataBase, base with two S's. We will see you again soon. Thank you for tuning in. This was Kinda Neat.